Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yeah, so, again, I guess we'll do this overview kind of thing again, or, you know, how to order the arguments that need to be made to get another person to understand the simple math of 2 plus 2 equals 4 kind of thing. I guess you have to say it's a more complicated equation than that, but it doesn't seem all that very complicated in terms of you can make such simple statements that are just factual, you know, that there isn't, you know, we don't cure the universe's cancer. We don't produce anything where we fix anything that's broken. And the idea that it somehow enhances the universe for us to include the poison of torture into the universe, to inject the universe with the concept of torture, does seem a lot to overcome in terms of, well, how do you fix that? I mean, how do you make it worth the torture? Okay. So that's how simple it seems to me anyway, is that the obvious problem is I couldn't justify torturing anything for my gratification unless it's to fix a worse torture that I'm going to face, right? So, I mean, you could give somebody a headache to cure your cancer, but you can't give them cancer to cure your cancer, and you certainly can't give 10 people cancer to cure your cancer. I mean, it's that kind of math, which, you know, eventually this all gets to, is the idea that all you're looking for is a collection of logical statements, premises and ideas and notions about reality, and those add up to something, you know. And, you know, people are creating fake, you know, things that aren't real, things that aren't part of the equation, aren't part of the reality. And that's a big problem. So anyway, so leave us begin. So this is the crudest of outlines. Okay, didn't work on it, just wrote it down today, and I'll work on it. This will be my starting point. Okay, so you start with the idea of a reproducing chemical machine. Okay, and all you need is one, because you're going to add the simple little feature that it doesn't make perfect copies. So the copies keep changing a little bit. And obviously the ones that have bad changes, or, you know, changes that make them limp or do something else unpleasant, don't survive. And the ones that get changes that enhance their functionality, or at least enhance their competitiveness, are embraced by the system, and they survive more often. Now, it's not a fair fight, and the truth is, great stuff can get annihilated really easy, get struck by lightning or something. So it's not a perfect system, but that's what it does over time, and it's had lots of time to do that. Billions of years, technically. At least a billion years of evolving stuff that we would call alive. Anyway. And so what it evolved into is this idea that you have to basically collect energy to function, to make eggs and to do the work of laying eggs and do the work of protecting eggs all takes energy. And so all of these organisms end up becoming parasites pretty quickly, in terms of they have to steal energy to survive. The game really is, whose energy can you steal and how much of it can you steal, blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously for plants, it's just it's a less aggressive, in the sense that they're parasiting for land and territory and not so much for the energy itself. I mean, obviously they're competing for who can get the most sunlight. And so they'll block each other from getting it and all that kind of stuff, but they're not technically stealing it from somebody else. Now, there's parasitic plants, but the point is okay, it's a little bit less tooth and claw, or whatever you want to call it. But they're clearly machines, and they are designed to essentially make it unpleasant for other plants that will steal their territory. Okay. And so what that's all that was really the game is just making tools for survival. So the first tools are just, you know, eyes, mouth, you know, functioning devices, teeth to chew with, you know, little obvious things. And then part of what became, as you got more tools, you needed something to organize the tools, something to keep the tools from just jerking all over the place and, you know, reflexively reacting without any consistency to what needed to be done. And it was a huge advantage to shitting before you took off trying to fly even or something, right? I mean, there's just certain logical things that you can understand that, yes, it would be better if the body was coordinated, okay, in terms of how it approached its environment and using its tools. Yeah, there's probably some way to analogize that, but I haven't, you know, I don't have one off the top of my head. I guess you want your boats, you know, certain pitch to it if you're going to shoot your cannons, you know, that kind of thing. So the fact that a central reflex would be developed, and that's all the brain really is just a bunch of knee jerks. They're just a bunch of triggers, a bunch of devices, okay, that say, yes, those three conditions are met, I'm on. Those three conditions aren't met, something else is off, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just a bunch of triggers in the simplest form. The simplest way to understand it is just a bunch of switches. And if certain switches are off, then the whole game is off. If certain other switches are off, then certain other switches have to be on for there to be a rerouting of action and motivation and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, billions of cells. So you're talking about a very complex arrangement of sensing devices and determination regarding what kind of action. But it's all just a reflex. Everything we do is a reflexive action, essentially. It's just very complicated knee jerks, especially when we're doing language. And, you know, there's all kinds of jerks of your personal life experience that decide whether you will use the word fuck or not. You know, whether you'll say something offensive or not. Yeah, these are all triggers. They're all mechanisms that you either have an inhibition, you don't have that inhibition, you like this word, you like the way that one sounds, so you use it. Anyway. And the inverse, where obviously my brain is triggered as soon as somebody says bro to me or dude or bra or some other bullshit term, I'm saying, my brain is reflexively saying, fuck you, because I'm not any of those things to you, especially if you don't even know me. But if you certainly did know me, you'd know you're not going to call me that. Okay, and end up in any kind of friendly conversation, because my brain says that's patronizing shit talk. That's the kind of thing you say to somebody who's inferior. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so the brain is a huge subject. It's, you know, so much to it. You can ask questions about how it does something, and you know, how it mixes, how it forms, how it becomes static and immersed, and how it does all of this stuff. And the physical mechanisms, in my opinion, aren't terribly important. But just recognizing the fact that it's trainable, it's programmable, it's conditionable. Those are all really important words, so they really should be in there. So I'll be adding those. Those are really important. It's more than just, I have the word programming later, but it's important to understand the difference between conditioning and education and information. They're all different ways that your brain is manipulating your experience as a living creature. Okay, so we know the brain happened long before the fish happened. Okay, so, and we're just smart fish is the argument. So you know, it was all there already for these animals existing in a cruder existence. And they were doing the same thing we're doing. They're seeking comfort, and through instinct and through learned experience. So, you know, they almost get eaten by a shark. It's in there. Okay. And now I ain't going over there anymore because the shark almost ate me. That kind of stuff. They are conditioned by their experience to have reflexes that now trigger and prevent them from doing something stupid twice, right? I mean, doing something stupid once, my bad, or something, doing something stupid twice, you're really fucking stupid. Anyway, so we'll get to little trite sayings later, but I mean, So there, I could just make the argument. I'm just going to state it as I think it's a fact. Okay, I don't know if I can prove it's a fact, but I think it's a fact that if it learns, it feels. So the only use for feelings is really to preserve what we've learned. So the feeling reflex is a simple way of just saying no. Okay, that's a no of thing, and this is a yes thing. So it's sort of like flight and fight kind of response, you could argue, and that it's a shorthand. Your brain needs a shorthand. It can't, you know, it can't replay your whole previous experience. It has to consolidate it into these reflexes and triggers. It can't have triggers that say, well, I'm not sure if that was over there, and I'm not sure if it was gray or black, and I'm not sure if it was that. Yeah, you can't have all of that crap. Because then it can't act, you know, within a half hour. Anyway, so learning is feeling necessary. You need this reward and punishment mechanism built into your brain to make it possible for you to recognize success and failure, and for your brain to reward you, okay, for your successes and punish you for your failures to protect your body or, you know, do what's necessary to maintain the physical structure and all that kind of crap. All right, so we're just smarter fish that climbed out of the water. It's just a fact. We still have the residue of our fish origins. the organs, you know, they're all... the seawater is our blood. Is seawater. I mean, it's really. But you know, for a lot of people, this is a hurdle they can't get past because they can't understand that, you know, their biology is not some sort of beautiful, perfect mechanism. It's almost as ugly. Okay, as you know, the guts. And that's the real machine. And the guts say we're fish. Okay. Anyway. Feelings triggered by the body versus feelings triggered by the brain. So that's another monstrously big subject. Just recognize, you know, that we can feel good or bad because our body is in some kind of shitty condition and it makes us feel like shit. Or we can feel like shit because, you know, our mother just died or something. You know, we have bills to pay that we don't have the money. You know, lots of things can cause us to be triggered into some sort of negative emotional or physical feeling state. And hard to tell. Some of the stuff is such a wobbly line, whether your body doesn't like you or whether your brain doesn't like you. So I've lived with a lot of that, where it's hard to tell the difference between when my brain has created some sort of psychosomatic illness or whether I'm actually broken. You know, a lot of that is mood controlled, and you can, you know, there's lots of stuff where you could say, yeah, it's really just about your attitude. And if you wake up paranoid, okay, thinking about how you feel, that you're probably not going to feel very good. Even asking the question can be dangerous. I mean, asking yourself, how do I feel? I'm feeling a little feverish, and I can feel my heart beating, and it's pretty easy to find something wrong. But anyway, that's not exactly the point I wish to point out. It's just that we are capable of being triggered by mechanisms that don't have anything to do with logic or reasoning or smart or intelligent, that for many people they think too much with their anus and their penis, and too little with their brain. People driven by crude feeling mechanisms rather than the more sophisticated feeling mechanisms. But again, you don't need to feel an insight. You don't need to feel like if you knew exactly how thick a piece of glass was you were looking through. You don't need to have a feeling about that. All right, feelings have value, so that's the funny part of it. The brain creates the feelings to give you a sense of value. That is a sense that you have to protect your body, you have to protect this, or we're going to punish you. All right, so it created the feeling thing to create some idea that there was something necessary and valuable that you had to do. And the joke is that you doing it has no value. You surviving has no value. The only thing that has value are the feelings you're being exposed to force you to behave in a certain way. So this is the kind of evil of evolution, is this feeling engine is the real creator of value, and a lot of the value it creates is negative. So it could be argued that it's all whip, and the only positive is when they stop whipping you, and it feels really good not to be whipped anymore. So you could have a toothache, and not having the toothache would feel really good when it stops. Now, you're feeling good not because of a good thing. You're feeling good because there's an absence of the bad thing. And I think there can be a great deal of deep philosophical arguments made that that is a fundamental truth, that the only goods are really elimination of bads. All right, using experience to inform the balancing of values. So that goes back to the learning part. So it's sort of a circle of feedback loop, you could argue. That's the basic reason we feel, is so that these feelings can be used to create a capacity to make these judgments about whether or not I should run or I should fight. And so that's the kind of the, again, the argument that, you can talk about nature versus nurture. So that's the next thing on the list. Without jumping ahead, we do have this capacity to organize these values and put them in some sort of order. Now, whenever people say, things like, well, how will you rate the pain, a 10 or a 9 or a 7, that's always difficult, right? Because, you always want to say 10. But it's always kind of hard to put a number on it. So it's not that easy to know. We spend a lot of time stuck. And you can imagine organisms, you can see that in organisms, you can see that in other animals, in that their behavior is often stalled where they're stuck between a fear and a desire, and the two are competing with each other, and they have a dissonance, and they can't resolve and then eventually something clicks, one of the triggers triggers, and the jump in the pool, for example. I always kind of enjoyed that moment, like when it's a pool with kind of cold water in it, right? And you know, you're sitting there, standing there on the diving board, and you know, well, once you're in, it's going to be fine. But yeah, you're just like, I don't feel like it, you know, but you do feel like it, but you don't feel like it. And you just sit there in that moment of, you know, figuring out what's going to trigger you to finally just jump in the pool, because you know you're going to do it. And so this would happen to me more than, you know, this would repeatedly happen, and I would always know, well, you're eventually going to jump in, so why don't you just get it over with? And but there was still something in my brain that says, well, let's just procrastinate for some dopey reason, because we still don't want to do it. We want the end result of having gone swimming, but we don't want the, I have to start it by jumping into cold water. And, you know, just a, you know, it's just something you notice, that brains aren't perfectly efficient, and these triggers are, you know, you got to wait for them sometimes, even when you know what the resolution's going to be. I am going to jump in the water. I never walk back and don't jump in the water. So I know what the end is going to be. And yet the brain still creates some reason to pretend there's a decision to be made. All right, anyway. So there's a ton of that stuff people could talk about. The modern mystic brought up some, you know, the idea that your sense of time goes for this longer period of time, and you're subconsciously connected to the world when you fall off a ladder or something happens to you. So I've had lots of those events, but I, you know, this whole idea that your life passes before you is it's kind of, you know, it's just a bit of an exaggeration. And the idea that things speed up in some sense, that your subconscious actually does something that you can see it doing, is also bullshit. So I remember falling, you know, running on the asphalt. And yeah, my body did all kinds of things, you know, to land on the asphalt as gracefully as possible. But I still didn't experience it figuring that out. So things weren't expanded, you know, time wasn't expanded enough for me to get any real insight to how my brain was figuring out exactly how to turn me and do this and do that and all that stuff. So you get a little more insight into subconscious function, but you really don't get to, you're really not that close to the real speed that your brain is processing everything it does. And so obviously when I'm making this video, my brain has created the next couple of sentences before I get to speak them. And I can only hear, like, you know, I can say something and then my brain can tell, you know, a trigger goes off saying you didn't say that well enough. And so you have to modify your next sentence. So there would have been a different sentence, but you have to modify your previous sentence. So it's constantly changing the script. But clearly it's composing it, you know, at some fantastic rate. You know, it's running at a speed much higher than I'm running at for it to be able to organize the words and create the sentences. And it's doing it based on a formula that has something to do with the theme I'm trying to talk about. So, you know, that's the amazing part. It's not just regurgitating sentences. They're actually logically connected and all of that stuff, and I don't get to really see any of that creation. I just produce it, and then I witness me producing it and say, wow, that was pretty good. How'd I come up with that? Yeah, that was it. That was all right. So that little clip of me explaining that wasn't too bad. But, you know, I didn't think of it ahead of time. I didn't do it. My brain had to come up with all that crap. All right. Program. So nature versus nurture is the, you know, the phrase overstated. But the real thing is the other versus, which is being intelligent, being educated. So an intelligent education is more important than either nature or some kind of nice family nurturing. Part of the nurture is your life experience and what you're going to spend your time doing and how you're going to be doing it. And all of that is partly cultural too. So, just a little criticism. You see so many people and they're going down the street listening to music, and you're just saying, how much of their time, that their brain could be being educated, have they wasted listening to music? And, it's not something I didn't do in the past. I did. But you're just saying, once you appreciate how, that really is a lost opportunity, where you could have learned something, because there's so much you can learn. Now, in the past, there wasn't much on the radio, okay? Talk radio hadn't really taken off. It was just slogan radio or something, and music, and a lot of the channels were, if there was any conversation that was intelligent, it was all wrapped in political crap. So it wasn't like educational. And there wasn't like any Sesame Street on the radio, and even kind of, stuff that where you could learn while you're driving, or learn while you're doing something else mundane, like walking down the street or walking the dog or something. And it's just such a lost opportunity. And again, it's a cultural thing. People are creatures of the other people's habits. They mimic each other. Huge lost opportunities. All right, we can think, logically evaluate, independent of personal feeling interest. So I'm just saying that, that's the clear thing we can do. So regardless of how much people think we have some instinct to do something, and regardless of how much they think we're controlled by how we were brought up, the fact is that we can still, on top of that, we can do evaluations of puzzles and solve them, and we can focus a microscope, and we can, I use the word resolve, we can resolve the image of something, we can see if it really is there, we can seek better understanding, we can think about it, okay? So we can think about things and try to find flaws and try to find something that's, so I've often talked about that. There was moments in my life where I did some of that thinking, and as part of that thinking, I realized I was an asshole and a selfish shit. And, and then other times you realize those simple things about the fact that, my brain being comfortable and happy isn't any better for the universe than anybody else's brain being happy and comfortable. It just doesn't matter, frankly, who's doing the having fun and who's doing the horrible torment. It just matters that this stuff exists. And frankly, the secondary argument is if there's too much of that torture stuff, then you're not going to be doing anything worth it. It's pretty hard for us to do something worth torturing something for. So I'd certainly argue that, from my point of view, I can't see any benefit that would justify giving one kid cancer, let alone thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of kids cancer every year. I can't see anything the human race is doing that's worth that. Okay. Independent of personal feeling interest. Okay, and then it comes down to this idea that you're really just solving logical puzzles. So you're just really saying, what are the facts of our existence, and how do I put those facts together in a coherent, connect the dot way, where I haven't cheated, where I haven't distorted the image they produce of what existence is. So again, I'm sort of arguing that if you really look at it the way it is, we're just bugs. It's just a bug planet. We happen to be bugs with a big brain that can do lots of talking and bullshitting, but frankly, we're doing the same thing the other bugs are doing. We're cleaning our own antenna, and we're doing all that kind of crap. And some of us can be devoted, like an ant. They can be devoted to the hive, you know, through their programming. They can be very family oriented, or they can be very church oriented. They can be some orientation they have to some bigger social institution. They can be a drone to it, you know. But it's just bug life. That's all we have. There's nothing else to do here but be a bug. And you know, I think, you know, the great advantage we do have is that at least the puzzles we're solving are more complicated than how to get over a stick, or you know, around a river or across a puddle or whatever, you know. And some of the puzzles are about the nature of existence and how to maximize the inefficiency, minimize the inefficiency of existing, and make it perform better, waste as little gasoline value as possible, torture as few organisms as is necessary. So again, the word necessary is just needs don't need to exist. So this idea that there's something here that's necessarily here, that has to be here, that's the problem. There really isn't anything that needs to be here. And the rest of the universe proves it in terms of there's no apparent deficit created by the absence of living organisms on Mars. Nobody has cried a tear, okay, because a bunch of silly human bugs aren't wiggling around on Mars making problems for themselves. All right, formalize the elements with mathematical precision. So that's just sort of the argument, is that that's what our brains can do. So our brains are mixing bowls. They take in all kinds of crap. And the fact is the bowl gets shaped a little bit about, you know, with that information, with those life experiences. And it has a capacity, okay, if you give it enough information, to mix very well. And if it has poor information, it's not going to mix anything useful. And so it's really important that the math not have broken integers in it, you know, that it not have, you know, 1 plus W equals stick. You know, it has to have a consistency, and it has to obey rules of logic, okay. So then just when the fact that I was talking about mathematical precision in how we do our logic and how we combine facts and make arguments, the value asymmetry argument of Benatar's just popped in my head, so I wrote it down. You know, just because that's Benatar's attempt to apply precise logic to the circumstance of this inequity, this strange irreversibility, if you want to call it, of the idea from good to bad, the idea that a preventing a bad is a good, right? But preventing a good is not a bad, because preventing a good doesn't make anything bad happen. So there's no negative there. So this is sort of the argument about the whip and the fact that all there is a whip, and there aren't any carrots. Okay, there's just the whip. So you stop the whip, you stop the bad. And that's good. But there's no good some other way. There's no other way to derive a good. Okay. So, needs don't need to exist, obvious. So this is where I was saying the part where, you know, there's certain things you have to, if you're going to be doing logic and doing it well, or being, you know, factual, you have to recognize the fact that, you know, your psychology is still fish. So, you know, I used to say bug, and then what was the lizard, ape, man kind of thing, you know, that you're, that's still in there. The ape is still inside of you, And the fish is still inside of you, in terms of some of your impulses or some of these reflexes. And, you know, it's pretty hard not to be distracted by what's in it for you, whether it be a good thing or a bad thing. And so you tend to push broken legs onto other people. You know, they're better, they can handle it better than I can. Let them have the broken leg. You know, that we're kind of just corrupted by the fact that we have to feel our pain and we don't have to feel somebody else's. And that makes it a little hard for us to recognize this principle that there's no difference. You can say there's no difference between your pain and my pain. I can say it, right? I say it all the time. But I can't feel that to be true. It's a hard truth to make into an internal, I'm comfortable with that. No, I'm always going to be uncomfortable with that because there's a part of me that just says, I don't want to. You know. All right. What is best, and then ... for me, you know, and that's what it turns into. So doing what's best is always, should be a calculation about the best interest overall. You know, all the little players have to have a good result, and it can't be just a good result for you. Then you're not making intelligent decisions, you're making unintelligent, selfish ones. And it's a real liability, and you know, we're all stuck being pretty bad at being truly fair cops. All right, allowing body parts to influence too many value judgments. So that's just another slight against, you know, too many people thinking with their penis and shit. All right, without accountability to principles, we are corrupt judges. So this idea that we have to be accountable to the principles, and the only way we can be accountable to them is you have to be humiliated by failing. So failing to honor one of your ideals or principles has to embarrass you, okay? You have to feel like shit. You have to feel like a piece of dirt. You have to feel bad. And if your brain isn't making you feel bad when you violate principles, then you're probably not going to be a good judge. You're not going to be a fair cop. All right, preventing bad is the only real good, so already stated. Okay, satisfying an unneeded need is not the definition of a profit. Yeah, so you're not, you know, the fact that you didn't get a flat tire, okay, it's good, but you didn't, you know, you're not winning. You're just not losing. And there's a distinction. Okay. Our normal state is just acclimation to a bunch of little miseries. So this is another argument I'll make, that our gratification is really made out of the fact that our natural state is kind of tense and irritable. I mean, I have it with my, I don't know, I have some sort of, it's not, I wouldn't call it, a doctor said it's some sort of silent migraine thing. But whatever. But yeah, I mean, I get it in my eyes especially. And it's just this heavy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, it feels like an allergy, but there's no other symptoms. You know, it just, and it just, you know, ew. And if that went away, yeah, that would be like, you know, the orgasm thing or something, you know, that kind of idea. So your pleasures are really made out of the fact that there's these little moments where you get to reboot, or you're free from your miseries, and those become your little bits of euphoria that you're allowed to travel through for a brief few seconds now and then. So for a brief few seconds of your life here and there, you get to travel through euphoria, but the rest of the time you're in shittus, or, you know, whatever. Let's see, yeah, I'm trying to think of some Nirvana word, some Yeah, but even Nirvana, right, is just the big joke is it sounds, like the hype makes it sound like it's a heaven or something. And the real game is that you don't have to play anymore. Nirvana is getting out the exit door, and just falling off the exit cliff. There's no, it's not a place, it's not anything. It's just getting out of the obligation to come back and be a bug again. All right, so that it is important that we all recognize that yes, we are all mixing bowls. We all are taking in all this information and data and experiences and all the senses and all this bullshit. And we can all talk to each other, exchange ideas about concepts, about what we see in this mixture, what we can bake out of it. All right, and so I'm going to say that yes, I've properly baked. Zero sum game, okay? That we're not gonna, we're, you, you know, you, you're all you're doing is digging yourself out of a hole you were born in, and that's all you'll do for the rest of your life is climb your way out of a dungeon, and you'll feel good when you see a little more sunlight, and you'll feel good in little moments of your life, but they're only because you start off in such a hole. So we can all invent, I can invent some sayings and recipes about how to think and what to think and what are the truth is and all of that kind of stuff. And you can take advice or inspiration or guidance from others who have invented or collected working recipes. So some people have like little bits of insight. So something can be compelling and interesting. So when like you, there was a time when I didn't know Mark Twain made a couple of really good anti-natalist statements, regarding that the luckiest man is the man who never got born and that kind of statement. And that's a piece of information, it's a piece of wisdom or knowledge or dough or it's more than that. It's a product. It's a baked muffin, and it's a muffin that looks good to me. It looks like, yeah, that's a pretty good piece of baking. And so, that's sort of how we exist, is that we can wait for ourselves to invent, or we can talk to other people and find out arguments and counter arguments and find out what experiments were done and what kind of other things might prove a point. But the real point is for you, there's no point in calling us intelligent creatures if we're not going to do that mixing intelligently. So if people are going to cling to religion and cling to superstitions and cling to hope and wishes, that's just not going to bake anything that's real. That's all just poison for the future. So I just as a funny statement, I guess, how long would it take me to mix? So have I never heard this the phrase "do unto others as you would have others do unto you"? Do unto, yeah, unto. Okay, others, yes, fix that too. All right, there, better. As you would have others do unto you. Right. So if I never heard that phrase, now the negative thing is the context of religion. But obviously that didn't bother me very much. Okay. First it did, but it didn't last very long because I said, well, it's just a great statement. Who cares where, what people are spouting it? It's just very logical. That if I should expect certain treatment, I should be able to provide that same courtesies. So the things I would want other people to do are things I should be doing, not very complicated. I should get what I've earned, okay, what I've been willing to give. All right. Your rights end should be in here. End. Okay. I sure got sloppy at the end here. Where someone else's, just put an S there. Anyway, rights begin. So, another, I don't like the word begin because obviously somebody else's rights don't really begin, they exist as a island and yours is an island. And so you could almost argue that you don't have a right to put your fence across somebody else's fence. You know, you have to respect these property lines, and then rights have property lines. And, you know, but again, it's another statement where you say, well, yeah, I could have invented that. But all these little statements that do mean a lot, okay, in terms of informing us. And so, you know, there's a lot of them. You know, judge a man based on the content of his character. Now, I wouldn't add that, and not the color of his skin, because that implies that you have some good reason to be afraid of the color of his skin. And, you know, that just adds to sort of the unfairness, that as soon as you concede that you have some good reason, well, then you really can't do this judging based on the content of his character, because you're always going to be distracted by the color of the skin. So your obligation is really to judge each individual as an individual, not based on what club they belong to or what card they're holding or some other bullshit. But the counter argument is you know, some things you can profile, okay? I mean, you can profile silly liberal and you can profile Nazi Republican. That's pretty easy to do. So anyway. But anyway, there's all these little statements that people could make where are paragraphs, sentences or paragraphs or, you know, chapter of a book even, where something is articulated very well and stated very well, and it's a very good collection, okay, built by, you know, their mixing bowl. And, you know, some of that we should build upon, okay? There's another great saying, standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, it's a good acknowledgement of how much had to go into your point of view. I mean, you could say standing on a pile of, you know, dead Americans who had to die for their country, blah, blah, blah. Lots of ways of just pointing out that, you know, this whole process is a process, that one person doesn't just show up on Earth and have all the answers, that we have to put the answers together. We have to, you know, we have to take this circumstance where bugs fly by and birds and trees grow and rain falls and all this stuff happens, and we have to put all of that together. And it would be impossible for us to put it together and to make anything of it if we weren't informed about weather systems and time and geological history and, you know, all of this information that had to be gleaned before we can have anything like a rational conversation about what it is to be here. I mean, if you just show up, you don't know that, you know, birds have guts. You don't know they have a brain. You don't know anything. You don't know anything about anything. You don't know the difference between a mammal and an amphibian. You don't know you don't know anything about the complexity of the system you're part of. And the only way we do know it is through this collecting of good ideas and good themes and good principles, and recognizing which is, bad programming, garbage, religion, stuff that's not going to make a brain work better. It's going to just fuck it up. It's going to make it a bad calculator, because it's mixing a fact that isn't a fact. All right, so I'll take a break here and see if I have anything to add. I think that's all. Yes, that's it. All right. So, see ya. I'll add something, so I will see you soon. All right, back. What came to mind was the key points that are going to be argued are this, the existence of this thing called value, in the sense that some people just can't accept the fact that, yes, there is no value in the hardware, the materials that make us up. There's no value in anything happening or not happening in the mechanical sense besides the event of a feeling. So my argument is that we experience being alive and conscious, and I'm quite aware of the indestructible value of the difference between me feeling good and feeling bad, and that it's the very definition of the word bad and good is derived out of a bad feeling and a good feeling. Relief and pain are the only concepts, okay, that have value in them. Is, are you relieving something, or are you causing this thing called misery, or are you preventing it or fixing it? And that's it. So the feelings have value. Not what you feel about, not what causes you to feel. The feeling is the value. And all we can do in this game is substantially, the guaranteed good is preventing bad. So, and any other kind of good is a lot harder to define than the simple one of stopping the whip. The idea of a carrot, or a real profit is hard to define. And the easy thing to define is a loss. So that would be my simplest argument to that crap, frankly. That there's no value. That, of course, you can't convince me that how I feel doesn't matter. That the universe would be just as good if it had a billion of me tortured as if it had a billion of me, comfortably enjoying a cupcake. Or ice cream or some other indulgence. Haven't had ice cream in decades, long time. Anyway, the other argument is that somehow people think they're worth it. So they really think it's worth giving a kid cancer to win the Olympics or something, or to have an Olympics, that the Super Bowl is worth paralyzing a kid for. those kind of values. Somehow in their logical brain, they have a structure that says that, yes, these almost silly moments of joy where we defeat the masses and we are the winner and they are the losers, when we create a bunch of losers, that something good is happening. So it's really bad mixing, in my opinion, really bad logic, very bad thinking, to think any of it's worth it. And that certainly if I had to inject somebody with cancer to have something or to make something happen, I can't imagine what it would be besides preventing two other people from having cancer. I can't think of any purpose, accomplishment, creating something, building something, making something that would be worth torturing something, except to prevent more torture. I mean, I can't come up with any other way to make it make sense. Where I would vote for it, or I would do it, especially doing it. Not me. not my idea. I'm not going to pretend that torture is an acceptable price, because it's not. Ooh, yeah, I forgot about that little Christmassy thing I did. it's funny. Life is so full of stuff, all this stuff that is still you, but it's a distant, very distant you, a distant version of you. So anyway, I only planted sunflowers 1 year, So it's kind of funny. Just because they're kind of disappointing. You know, they grow all this stuff, all these leaves and all this shit, but, you know, they do the sunflower thing for like 3 days and then they tip over and, you know, forget it. So, yeah, I don't, you know, not good enough. Anyway, so, yeah, so I think that's enough. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. You know, it's working on this thing and saying, okay, how much of this stuff and how much detail do you have to go into? And, you know, so I'll do some refining and we'll see if I can add something new or at least categorize the old arguments in some more formal way. Blah, 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 blah. And that will be the intent anyway, is to make is to cook the product. Okay, and provide you with the fully baked cake. And then you can just sit there and, you know, pick at it and see if you can find some flaw in how I baked that cake. Anyway, okey-doke. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Yeah.